Hey guys, so we got some news. We will no longer be posting our full-length podcast here on the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, wherever you're listening to this right now. Instead, we're going to be posting the first half hour of the episodes here for you guys to listen to. But the full version will be available on either our YouTube channel for free. Yes, you can still watch and listen for free on the YouTube app. Or you can join our brand new Patreon and spend $10 a month to get the full episodes before they're posted on YouTube, free of ads. You can listen to the audio on the Patreon app, or you can actually get a link from the Patreon app and add the link to the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, wherever you're listening, and listen to our stuff through the same app that you're using right now. In terms of why we're making this decision, we are expanding the business a lot right now, and it just doesn't really make any sense for us to keep giving away this content for free to services like Spotify, who are making money off of our content without giving us anything in return. So by either listening to our content on YouTube for free and watching the ads, or paying the 10 bucks a month to listen via Patreon, you're helping us take No Jumper to the next level. Enjoy this episode. No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world, and today we got Boz on the podcast.
Yes, sir.
And so, okay, Boz, not Baz, which is how I've been always saying it every time I see your name in my head for all these years.
Yeah, it happens. I've heard a few iterations. But Boz, yep.
I feel like I'm just inclined to do more of like a eh sound than like a ah sound for whatever reason. Like, I don't know what that is, like that I just kind of grew up with that being like the default way of saying the A sound.
Yeah, I mean, my real name is Abbas.
Oh, okay.
And the dude at Chick-fil-A yesterday called me Abbas.
Really?
So, you doing all right.
I mean, do you have to deal with that constantly, though? Like, if you go to Starbucks and do an order, do you just write B-A-S?
I just pick fake names now.
Really?
Well, yeah, sometimes I'm Fred. Sometimes I'm Mark. I make it easy for them.
I respect that. Because people constantly mispronounce my last name and my girl's name. And at a certain point, it's not like... I'm not trying to educate the world.
Like, I'm just getting iced coffee.
Yeah, just give it to me.
It's not that serious.
I'm gonna make this as easy as possible for you. For sure. Okay, so do you have a new album coming out, or are you just sort of doing press in relationship to the single that's out?
Yeah, you know, I do have an album coming, but it's really all about the single right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because when I heard that you were down to do an interview, I was like, oh, damn, all right, interesting. He's going to have a new project. I'm going to listen to that. And then when I go on Spotify, the most recent project was like 2018.
Right. Yeah. You know, I've been doing, at least for my fan base, like I'm known for my albums and like cohesive bodies of work. And I'm, you know, I'm proud of that. But I was just challenging myself this year, like, all right, like, you know, what is the next frontier I'm trying to conquer? I'm like, damn, I want some smashes. I want some hits.
Right.
So I've just been lining a few of those up.
Interesting. Do you still see, like, the value in an album? Because just for instance, I was interviewing Hobson the other day, and, I mean, he ain't put out an album since, like, 2017, but he drops music videos that'll get 20 million views all the time. And he just, even though he's super capable as an artist, like, and totally capable of, like, thematically putting an album together, he just ended up feeling like the fans don't really care about the album format so much.
I think, you know what, consumption kind of changed all of that. Obviously, like, as an artist, that's still, like, your baby is, like, putting these projects together and putting your growth into, like, this one concise body of work. And I still want to do that for myself and my fans, but, you know, you got to look at the landscape a bit. And it's almost nowadays, like, you put out your album and it's, like, the end of the buzz train, you know what I mean? It's crazy how things change because now people even... Albums are being carried by singles. Like, people are doing crazy numbers, but it's really like two or three songs that are just getting streamed nonstop. You feel me?
Right.
So it definitely changed the landscape. But for me, I guess it's just like a personal bone to pick. Like, I got to make sure the album's tight.
Definitely. But like, if you're really thinking about kind of just doing singles this year or whatever, like, does that change the recording process? Because like, there's a lot of songs that you probably make that you would never think would work as a single. This is the album track. This is a song that I care about, that I respect, that I'm doing just for the art of it, and maybe it'll make a great song 14, but it's not going to be, you know, the song that we want to spend all this money doing a video for or whatever.
Right. It depends what point, because I started working on this album probably like before even quarantine started. And then I caught a big chunk of it just locked in, you know, isolating myself pretty much. And I got real, I think I discovered the body of what the album was going to be. You know, and then the singles, I didn't start doing till later. Like, I just did the Jackie in May when I was working on the off season with Cole, and that just came about. in one of those sessions, you know? And so it's just like, if you know what your album sounds like, it makes it easier to then craft singles that mold and fit into that sonic landscape.
Mm. Did COVID simplify your life and turn you into just like a studio rat and you didn't have to balance all the other stuff that you're normally doing?
It did. It gave me a lot of time to be with family. Mm. You know what I mean? My nephews. I flew my parents out here for like 4 or 5 months. They was just kicking it.
Mm.
And then, you know, prior to that, I was on the road since like 2013 or something, you know, like 6-7 months out the year.
Right.
On road. So me and the homies were joking, like, I'd take that like once a decade, low key, you know, without the pandemic.
Right.
But if we just had like 6 months off, it just kind of regroup.
With this Delta, man, it kind of makes you wonder if it's coming back around.
I really hope not, man. That would fuck a lot of shit up.
For real, definitely. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, when I think about Dreamville, like, hypothetically, I kind of imagine y'all, like, posted up in the studio and not really socializing as much as some rappers. You do, okay.
I'll be outside, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that important? That's a part of the process? You just need some life experience?
It is, for sure, yeah. Like, I do a lot of traveling, you know, regularly. I like to, you know, just be in the clubs, feel the energy.
Mm.
It inspires you. It lets you know even as much as, like, what sonics are working. You know what I mean? You might lead a club like, damn, like, my hi-hat's not bright enough, you know? My 808's not fat enough. Whatever the case may be, you kind of got to stay. I feel like you need to stay in tune, at least with the sonics. And then, you know, artistically, you can get a lot more across if the sonics are right because, you know, otherwise the kids ain't trying to hear that shit.
Mm. But do you feel like even as like a grown ass man that's been rapping for a long ass time, and I feel like probably a lot of your fans are very lyrical rap fans that want to hear good rapping and sincerity and, you know, interesting topics and shit like that. I mean, as a rapper, do you still kind of get caught up in the rat race of having to keep the kids happy to a certain extent?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, we're still in the music business. You know what I mean? You're making your songs. I think that's the art in it, honestly. The art isn't just you expressing yourself freely. I hate to sound like, you know, but the art is presenting that in a way that's palatable to people. And, you know, hopefully as many people as you can get it across to.
That's interesting because, like, I feel like a lot of rap fans, or at least maybe when I was younger, I think now people aren't even pretending that this is any other way. But, like, when I was younger, it felt like rappers who did anything to be more commercial or change their style up for commercial reasons is always looked down upon. Whereas now, I mean, when you have a conversation with like a rap fan about where a rapper's at in their career, I mean, it feels like the default is to talk about how they're doing commercially, not how they're doing artistically, you know?
Right.
Like everybody judges themselves on that standard now.
Yeah, it's kind of been, because even like the consumption numbers are in front of you every day. Like you click Spotify, it's like you got this many streams on this song, this many monthly listeners, whatever the case may be. Mm. It's hard for people to, you know, differentiate those things.
Definitely. But yeah, I mean, I guess the success of the music is like impossible to separate from the art itself. So, yeah.
I think that's the goal is like to get that success in a way where you don't feel like you're compromising yourself or your artistic integrity.
Right.
And, you know, like I said, that's where the art is to me.
But, like, artistically, on this new single, it feels like you have kind of, like, changed your style up. It's more singy. It's less, like, straight rapping. Was that a conscious choice?
My last album, Milky Way, was starting to explore melodies a lot more. Mm. And even, like, just a brighter sound. And then I did this record with FKJ, French Kiwi Juice, called Risk, pretty recently. Another one with Gal Matias, who's a producer-artist out of Denmark, where my style's been kind of growing more melodic over the years as is, you know? So I'm sure to my fan base, they don't feel out of pocket. To someone who might just be like, you know, Dreamville-centric, it might be like, okay, you know, this don't sound like a Dreamville record, but that ain't necessarily my goal, you know? Mm. My goal is to make boss records.
I mean, but is there pressure associated with that? Because Dreamville, like, as a brand, it's like, you know, I think about, like, G-Unit to me when I was 18. If they had put out a G-Unit rapper who wasn't gangster, it would have been confusing. And if Dreamville, you know, as a Dreamville artist or somebody who's so closely attached to Cole, a big chunk of your fan base probably expects you to follow a certain style, right?
Yeah, I think so. But I also think that's what's made me unique, you know, amongst our set as far as my sound. I grew up, even the things I listened to growing up were, you know, I have four older siblings. They're playing me like Jamiroquai and Daft Punk and, you know, like UK Garage, all a real Eurocentric sound, you know, a lot of West African music. So I even have, on my last album, I have like two records that are like South African house. You feel me? So I think because it's not out the blue, because I've been, even my very first mixtape, my intro, I ripped the Jamiroquai beat off YouTube and I rapped on that, you know? So from jump, I've been training my fan base from that regard of like, there's really no box that I want to be put in.
Yeah, sometimes do you feel like there's a risk and like, you know, sometimes I feel like Spotify has sort of like flattened the sound where it's like everybody's just sort of incentivized to sound the same and risk taking is not rewarded as much and everything, which is kind of a sad state of affairs because I feel like the rappers who are really going to win are the ones who are willing to take artistic leaps and make something that doesn't sound like everything else that's popular right now. But sometimes it feels like the industry is geared in such a way that that is just not really prioritized.
Yeah, again, that's a consumption thing. Like playlist, you go through the big playlist that you kind of feel like you're listening to the same record over and over. But what I will say is those artists that do take a chance, you see it when they go on tour. You see how quick their tickets blow out. You see how, you know, how quick their albums do. Look at someone like Tyler, you know what I mean? Like, we've seen Tyler's growth every album to like where now he's a top Billboard, blowing out all his shows type dude, you know? And it's like, if you stay consistent, if you keep building that sound, they're gonna grow with you. And then I feel like there's always that breaking point where we see it just like cross over to the mainstream.
Yeah, Tyler's whole career is pretty shocking when you really think about it, because he just has such a hardcore fan base that they're gonna follow him whatever genre he wants to touch.
Yeah, you know? But even for someone like me who was like casual, like Tyler fan with some of his earlier stuff, you feel me? Like some of his later stuff, I feel is as he's matured as an artist, as a person, as a producer. Now I'm like, oh, damn, this is like, this is the vibe. This is shit like I was growing up on. This remind me of Nerd, it remind me of Pharrell, but it's like, it's new, it's Tyler. It's like a whole new iteration of it. So, you know, it's like hats off to bro. Like, it's hella inspiring.
Yeah. I like that he brought it back to the rap shit on this project a lot. Like, I was kind of shocked, but it also was just, I don't know. It was like a real breath of fresh air after he took another project to do sort of all this experimentation.
Right. But the production is still like, it's still experimental. You know, it don't sound like a bunch of trap beats. You know, he's experimenting with his sound.
Definitely. What's your, when you're picking beats or when you're figuring out what you want your project to sound like, what's the process typically like? Because it feels like on any of your songs it could kind of go in a million different directions sonically. It must be kind of overwhelming picking out the soundtrack.
Yeah, I gotta be my A&R, you know. I think I always know, it's about balance for me. So if I know I have a certain amount of songs that are, you know, doing this like melodically and bright and just make me feel good. At the end of the day, I like to make like real feel good music. Like my shit not sad like that, you know? It's just like, I want to make people feel good. But, you know, I'll know like, okay, I need a joint where I'm snapping, where I could rap aggressively because the album is lacking that, you know? Or I need a joint maybe that's got more tempo that they could dance to. And then I try to find those records within like the sonic landscape of the rest of them joints, just so you know, the goal is for people to be able to play your shit through, even though that's not how music is consumed now, you know. It's like it's a few stars next to the songs and people are clicking those songs because they see a star next to it, you feel me? But you know, that's not how I create it.
I feel old sometimes when I'm around people and I put on an album and I click track one.
Yeah.
Let it play. Yeah, that's how I take it in, bro.
Yeah, nah, me too.
Definitely. I think a lot of people, like on more of a mainstream level, probably kind of first saw you or first like or most recently like thought about you in the context of that Down Bad record with Young Nudy and shit. And I know, like from my perspective, we think of like what Young Nudy's doing and what Dreamville's doing as kind of being like on just other opposite sides of hip hop that don't typically overlap. How did that song come about and what did you think about I don't know, the way it all came out?
I think that was the whole point of Revenge of the Dreamers 3. It's like, you know, Dreamville's always been kind of, you know, on its own, off to the left, you know, left of industry in a sense. And we were like, let's go to Atlanta. Let's link with a bunch of people. Let's bring them to our world. You know, let's collaborate. We all got a really open, collaborative process when it comes to creating music. So we were down there. Nudie pulled up. I think he did a couple joints when he came to the sessions. You mm-hmm. know, and Down Bad was just like, I was the one.
Right. What do you think of street rap in general? Like, are you a fan of it? Do you sort of look at that stuff?
I mean, I probably listen. I definitely listen to more street rap than I listen like conscious rap. If I'm keeping it a buck.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it just give me energy.
Mm.
And then I like, you know, I think there's a lot of like creative things they're doing. Even like the Brooklyn drill scene, I'm heavy. Mm. That's what I play like when I'm in my whip.
Really?
And I'm trying to hear some turn up shit. That's you know what I mean? I'm tapping into all of them. So yeah, I mean, Future's like top three to me most influential artists ever. If you look at his tree of like, you know, kind of offspring in a sense.
Mm. You think that era of like conscious rap is supposed to be like against street rap or whatever? You feel like that's kind of old school and that kids don't think about it that way? Or do you think your fans think about it that way?
I would hope not. I mean, shit, Kodak to me is a conscious rapper. He's a street rapper, but he got songs where you're like, damn, like I feel exactly where he's coming from. I feel his struggles. A lot of Young Boy, NBA Young Boy, like, yeah, they're considered street rappers. Those dudes are conscious as hell. If you listen to some of the like the pain and the shit they're putting in their records, like I ain't never been through what they've been through.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm getting it through them. I'm learning that through them.
It's crazy because, like, I just grew up thinking of those as being, like, completely separate poles in rap. Like, there was Talib Kweli and The Roots and shit, and then there's just whatever's going on the other side of shit. And you would never even hear, you know, 50 Cent or somebody like that, like, mention the other side of rap. It's just they didn't really overlap that much. And now it feels like that shouldn't exist. Like, there's no reason for that. It's kind of like an arbitrary distinction.
Right. Maybe it's social media because we're like everyone's tapped into each other's lives now too. Like you're tapped into everything that's going on, you know what I mean? And I don't think 50 and them had that. They probably was just very insulated in whatever world they was in, you know. But for us, it's like, you know, if I follow a couple accounts, if I follow your account, follow No Jumper, I might see what those dudes are doing or what they're dropping, what they're releasing. Like everything is so connected now that, you know, you can't really avoid it. And then you'll be like, well, shit, I actually really rock with this dude.
For sure. Was there something about Lil TJ in particular that you wanted to have him on the project?
Did you get it?
I hit the fly, but I didn't.
That fly been giving me business.
But I didn't kill it. God damn it.
TJ, well, the song really, when we did the song, I was explaining to Cole, the Jackie's, you know, well, he knows, but the Jackie's is a parkway that goes from Queens to Brooklyn. And I'm like, growing up in Queens, when you used to go to like another borough to see a girl and you'd get to her block and you'd start getting the looks from all the dudes on the block. Like one dude might've been her first boyfriend. Like this dude got a crush on her now. You know, one dude's her neighbor who's been crushing on her forever. And like, there's always that tension when you get on the block. And so then, you know, I was explaining that story to him and we're like, well, shit, we got to get another New York dude on here. And TJ came, you know, repping the Bronx. So we had to do that.
Definitely. Yeah, I remember like when I lived in Astoria back in like 2003, 2004, that I met a Puerto Rican girl who lived in the Bronx and she was talking about her neighborhood or whatever. And I was like, oh, I should pull up sometime. She was just like, no.
Yeah,
like,
it's a problem.
You absolutely could not come to my block. And she's explaining to me like my brother's blood, like all his homies, like they would press you. Like they would. Like, it just would not be some chill shit.
Yeah, I got my tire slashed going to see some girl in the Bronx back in the day.
Oh, my God. I wish I had a car back then. I could have a story like that.
Yeah. It's real. It's real. Don't go to another borough to see a shorty. Like, you'll get caught up.
That was one thing that always amazed me living in New York all those years was just how many people I would meet who, like, were from Cheapside Bay and they had never been to Manhattan. They had never been to Queens. Like they went to Manhattan one time on a school field trip and it was like something to talk about.
Right.
Like
I've
real
never
tale.
Seen the Statue of Liberty.
Really?
To this day. Not really pressed to neither.
That used to be my thing is that if I had to take a girl on a date, I would take her on the Staten Island Ferry and you could like see it and that felt like it was something.
That's smooth.
Yeah. Cheap. It was free.
That's a good that's a good date.
Yeah. I had no
money. Little halal plate, little street meat.
Then we gotta sit on the train and go up to like 50th Street or some shit to get like one of those really famous halal places. Yeah.
That's a good date right there for the low.
Yeah, for sure. Nowadays, They want you to spend money on them.
Yeah, dude, now you got to go to Nobu and shit.
So I hear. You get into that?
What? I mean, L.A. turned me into that a little bit.
L.A., it's unavoidable. There ain't no free date that I can pick up out here. No, we're going to walk around the park. Somebody's going to beat your ass.
Yeah, you can't do none of that. You can't do none of that.
For sure. Wait, how long you been in L.A.?
Like 5 years now, 5-6 years.
You're fully accustomed to it? You like it?
Yeah. I like L.A., man. It's real comfortable. Mm. You know, and I was able to do a lot more with the space here. Like, I got a studio in my crib. I was staying in the East Village before then. Mm. It was like 6-7 of us in a 3-bedroom, like, just grinding, trying to get to this point. So, you know, as soon as I got a little space and I could kind of move my operation in-house, it just made more sense.
The whole question is, what's better for the music? Like, the struggle of sharing an apartment with a bunch of people, or the serenity of being in LA and having a backyard and being able to walk outside and smell the flowers in the morning?
I think it's probably the struggle. That's why I still go home all the time. You know, I go home, I walk around, I take the train, I ride cabs, like, no car service type shit.
Mm.
I walk through the Lower East Side and bar hop a bunch of spots, just see what the vibes are. Like, that's what inspires me for sure. But I, you know, you need a space to create. Like, I feel like LA is like a creative campus.
Mm.
You know, everyone comes here to kind of unload all these inspirations they're grabbing from all over the world, link up with artists, producers. You can't really do that in New York. You might be in a studio on the 7th floor, and the artist you want to link with is like on the 9th floor. Mm. You know, you're not even gonna cross paths.
Right.
You know, whereas in LA, I can't tell you how many just random artists I ran into, like, in the hallway, like, yo, I fuck with you too. Like, let me get your math, and then, you know, something can come from that.
There's like a certain energy in the air in New York that you just can't avoid.
You
wake up and you just gotta, like, get on it. Don't matter if you're on like 3 hours sleep, it's just that fucking energy. And then the way that everybody's forced to live, where you're like everybody else, walking on the street and going to the same store to get a drink and shit like that. It's just like, LA is so different, because you could live in Beverly Hills for 20 years and you'll never have to see what's going on in Skid Row or Compton or whatever. Like, it just feels like everybody's sort of separated into their classes way more.
Right. Yeah, that's a fact. You should see New York right now is insane.
Just because everybody wants to be outside
back
now?
Outside. Mm. They're back outside with a vengeance, bro.
I hear.
If you got a week, a few days, go catch some of that energy. I did like that. A month back home. I couldn't leave. I was supposed to go for like a week. I just kept extending my shit.
What would you describe as the thing that was keeping you there? Just the energy?
The energy. Yeah, it was so inspiring. You know what I mean? Here, it's like you said, like, I could be in the crib. I can go in my studio. I don't have to leave my house at all. I was staying, I had a hotel on the Lower East Side, and it's like, I'm hearing the shit outside my window.
Mm.
Like, I'm hearing the bikes revving. I'm hearing the people in front of the bars at like 3 a.m. I'm like, man, fuck this. I'm getting dressed. I'm going outside right now. You know, like, I miss that energy. Like, something about hearing everything going on around you. You know, all the noise, all the sounds of the city, it just gets you outside.
Yeah, definitely. Can you compare that to, like, how much time? I know you spent time in Paris and Sudan growing up and stuff. How, like, contextualize that against the New York vibe or the LA vibe in terms of like what you would feel like going to spend time in those places now.
Yeah. I mean, I still go off, and Sudan is ill, because Sudan is like, you kind of always get to chill, you know? You know how we said the pandemic gave us like a second to all chill?
That's normal pace there.
Yeah, yeah. That's normal pace. Like, you're chilling with family, you're chilling with, especially me, I can see all my elders. They got like stories, you know, the history of our whole family, you know what I mean? You're learning so much. I'm seeing, like, you know, I'm just getting a chill. It's really relaxing. It's like detox, you feel me? Like, especially after touring for so much, like, you just always need a chill. That's one of the reasons I left New York. Because I was like, if I'm touring and I'm doing the after parties and I'm getting fucked up every night and then I'm coming home to New York and it's like tour times two, because I'm out now till like 8 a.m. every fucking night, I'm like, nah, this shit ain't sustainable.
Right.
You know, so I got myself out west, and it was like detox, bro.
Have you been keeping an eye on the protests that have been going on in Africa recently?
I seen South Africa's going up right now. I got a lot of homies in South Africa. Mad love for South Africa, first of all.
Right.
It's my favorite place to tour in the world.
I went to Cape Town for a week one time, and just the, like, we were just out there riding bikes back in the day, but it just, like, occurred to me, like, holy fuck, like, the income disparity just, like, stood out to me so much that it just made me, like, so much more curious about learning about the history of the country and stuff. And now seeing that they're having this uprising, I mean, I know that on the surface it's just because the president got locked up or something on those lines, but
he got like convicted. It's a lot of like ethnic beef out there, you know, because it's a lot of different ethnicities, and a lot of like the political lines are drawn along that. And I ain't like no expert. I just speak to a few of my homies out there. Like, yo, what's going on? It look crazy, and they trying to like kind of give me the news. But yeah, I guess the ex president got convicted on something. And but it's a lot of corruption out there, you know, like their COVID, all their COVID relief, from what I've heard, all those funds like disappeared. You know what I mean? And so that's why they're so far behind with the vaccine. They're on what, their fourth lockdown? They've been locked down 2 years. So I think it's a lot of things just boiling up to the surface. Like, yo, the government been doing this greasy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's bound to happen.
Yeah, I think like the oversimplified version of it is just that the people are so fucking fed up with just everything regarding their circumstances and how unfair their society is and shit. Like, I watched this clip on Twitter earlier today where a dude was like loading up TVs that he had just stolen from this business or whatever, and they're asking him why he was doing it, and it was like he was really saying like, this is the first time that I've really felt free. Like, it's not about these possessions. It's not about like any specific reason that we're here. But like in this moment, I really feel like we're free. And like, I actually feel the sense of relief of being able to even just make this small ceremonial gesture against the circumstances that I've been raised in.
Right. I think you saw a lot of that here with all the Black Lives Matter protests that was going on. And that was, you know, that happened to coincide with the pandemic as well. It was just like people being inside, being fed up. You know what I mean? And being able to use all that pent up energy on something that was like really fucking bothering them. You feel me? So I feel like, you know, it's not the same, because they're fighting for a different cause. But in a lot of sense, I mean, they have their whole history of apartheid, you know, which is what only ended like 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So like that shit is super fresh. So it's hard when all these ethnic groups don't trust each other and there's nothing really unifying them. And from what I've seen, it's like their political parties are really drawn along these ethnic lines.
Okay, guys, so hopefully you enjoyed that. If you did and you want to keep listening, head on over to our Patreon and support us. Give us that $10 a month and you can listen to the whole thing on this very app or through the Patreon app, or you can head on over to youtube.com/nojumper and listen to the whole thing for free with ads or without ads if you sign up for YouTube Plus. And yeah, appreciate each and every one of y'all. Thank you once again for all the support.